This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. This is Turner Mining Live. Live.
That's hilarious, Tracy. Tracy has jokes.
She's got jokes.
So, hey guys, what's up? It's Keaton Turner and Thomas Hahn. It's just the two of us. We switched up a little bit. We kind of surprised Tracy with kind of an impromptu, I don't know, four or five podcasts, however many we can get in by the end of the year.
Yeah, we'll get a bunch in.
We told her we needed probably a different intro, and that's what she gives us.
Yeah, yeah. She's got jokes.
Live. So, I don't know if the world knows. Tracy is having a baby next week, right?
Monday. Yeah.
Which we're all excited about. We hate to lose her for a while, but it's an exciting time in life. So, that was the first time I've heard the intro.
I had heard it before, which I loved.
I'm glad it wasn't any worse than that. But I owe Tracy a message after this.
Yeah, yeah.
So the point of the Turner Mining Live podcast from the beginning, from the inception of the idea of having a podcast, was to give as much. In my perspective, gives much behind the scenes, what's happening in our company.
Give them the real, real.
You know, the real look. There's tons of podcasts, especially now, right? Oh, yeah. This idea came up, I don't know, probably 2 years ago. There's tons of podcasts.
Yeah.
I think we've had a bunch of guests on that give a unique perspective, but this year's been a wild year for a lot of people with COVID. It's been a wild year for our business and a ton of changes. A
lot of change.
And I think we've somewhat lost our original goal of being as transparent as possible, just in all the craziness.
Sure.
Not intentionally hiding things, but there are a lot of feelings involved this year.
You had a lot of feelings.
There are a lot of people involved this year. A
lot of people.
And I tend to get us in trouble because I don't really care about feelings and emotions as much. I've stayed fairly quiet on a lot of it. But I don't know. A week or so ago, I was on Instagram, and a bunch of people have a bunch of questions, and we'll get to as many of them as we can. But one of the themes in all the questions that we got were all the changes that we've gone through this year.
Yes.
Probably from a more of a personnel changes than anything, because that's what people see the most, right?
Oh yeah.
This is an Instagram world, and it's one of the downfalls of making your people the hero of the story. Everyone knows all your people.
Sure.
And so when one of the people's not on the bus anymore, people know which person's not on the bus anymore.
I don't know. This industry's small, and I love all those people, right? Yeah. And I was actually talking with Bobby earlier today just about how much our alumni, I like to call them our alumni base is growing. To me...
People that aren't here anymore?
Yeah. Alumni? Whether that's their decision, our decision, a combination decision, right? Whatever. Our alumni base is growing because our company's getting a little bit older. But to me, and you sent out a message today about how closely connected we are with the former project manager of the company. Yeah. And, by the way, it's hilarious cause I was DMing him at approximately the same time. So, I think there is always going to be a Turner family that extends beyond what I would call like the four walls of the company. And I want to keep as tight of a relationship with those people as we possibly can. They have contributed to what got us here, and whether they're on the bus or not in this moment is somewhat irrelevant because they were on the bus at some point in time during the journey.
What makes this company, because you have a different perspective than I do, why did we make all those changes this year? People changes specifically right now.
I think it's just fit. It's fit in... kind of fit in time. And what I mean by that is I think there are certain people who will create value for this company very, very early. There are certain people who create value for the company right now. And there are certain people who will create value for the company in the future. And those are not always the same people for a lot of reasons. most of them not about that person.
And do you think companies, because I always wonder, because I don't want to be Steve Jobs, right, from a just axe people when they stop adding value type
no.
thing.
No.
But do you think companies just in general that maybe market a little bit on Instagram or LinkedIn or whatever, are there other companies thinking that way that like as soon as you maybe aren't adding value, we figure out where to get you to your next thing? Because I think a lot of the people that are no longer here, you know, at least from my perspective, maybe they would disagree, but we've kind of lovingly pushed them towards their next thing, which was probably better than what they were doing here anyway.
Well, I mean, that is definitely true. I think companies think differently about people because the company is different. That's why I said, I don't think it's about the person nearly as much. I think there are companies that want to, for lack of a better term, kind of stay the way they are. And those are the companies where you see people who have been there for 30 plus years.
Yeah.
Because they're a fit for the company and the company hasn't really changed. And so if you're a fit for the company 30 years ago and the company doesn't change, boom, you're still there 30 years later.
Leads me into exactly the point I wanted to make, which was all the changes that we've made here, how does that play into the people that are no longer here?
I think I agree with your comment that I think they're better off where they are. And again, not because of them. They are ridiculously talented and capable individuals. To me, it's about what they can do to create the most value. And some of them, that means starting their own company.
Yep, we've seen that.
Yep. Some of them means going to what I would call like a smaller firm. And some of them, it means going to a global firm.
Yeah,
right.
We've seen all that.
Which you could say is a better company than Turner Mining Group, right? And in a lot of senses, I would agree with that. So that's where I think it's really just about fit in time, kind of aligning both what an individual can contribute and what a business needs. And we will continue to evolve that, I am sure.
Are there any... because I ask myself this all the time. There's at different times I've regretted some of the changes that
I regret all of them because I love the people.
Yeah, that's the toughest part about what we do. And we've always told Liz, our recruiter, hire good human beings first. We're making a big search right now for a top level guy.
Oh, yeah.
or gal, whatever they end up being. And she said, what are the prerequisites? I said, well, the only one is be a good human being. The problem with hiring good human beings is that when you let one of them go,
but
it burns. I'd rather fire a bunch of jerks, which
sure,
I'm happy to do.
It's way easier to fire jerks. But again, to me, you're not even really firing somebody. To me, you are helping them find the next thing that they're going to create the most value in. And when you do that, and if it's done right, they are better off. We are better off. And I just...
Are there any that we've... And I'm asking you this question because I've asked myself it many nights. Are there any that we didn't do right, you think, in your mind, that we would have done differently looking back?
No. But I don't look back a lot. Yeah. It's probably my biggest weakness. It is very hard to change the past. When people get in, you know, discussions here about, oh, well, we should have done this or why didn't we do that? I love the discussion for the learning of it, but when people fixate on it, I want to ask them to invent a time machine because that's actually the only way you're going to to solve that. Right. So, and no offense, but I'm just not smart enough to invent a time machine. So I don't tend to look back because I think the context in that moment made the totality of that situation happen, right? So I mean, honestly, I think we treat everybody, and that's why I say I like calling them alumni because I want them to feel that way.
Yeah, some of them probably don't think of themselves as alumni. I've got a million regrets. But some
have graduated beyond us. I mean, my thing is, and I know people tend to talk about...
They're not all in a better spot, though. So they would say, well, you know...
I don't know.
I don't feel like when you graduate college, you feel like you're in a better spot. Some people want to go back to college though, right?
That's my point.
They don't want to be an alumni. They want to be in college.
Sure. I just, you know, being in college, years 6, 7, 8, and 9 are probably not as contributing.
Yeah.
So I just,
I've got a million regrets, and it's, and they're not, they're, I mean, some of them are people and how they departed and all that. I feel like we went above and beyond in, you know, in the moment to do what was right.
Sure.
One of our core values, you know, heart for people.
Yeah.
My regrets are like, you know, maybe not bringing them here in the first place, you know, living and learning through that. You can't do anything.
So the regret is even further back.
It's really lessons for me, right? It's like, we're going to be conscious of who we bring in next time because we thought this person, like, honestly, I could probably name 6 people who are all awesome human beings who we thought were going to come in and just totally transform the way we operate. And you look at the way we operate now without those people, whoever those people are.
Yep.
I think we operate better now than before. So,
but that,
that's a me mistake.
I was going to say,
we just hired the wrong people, not the wrong people, but we were looking for the wrong thing, I guess, at that point.
I think that's fair. And I actually appreciate that you're willing to say that because I would agree. Everybody in business is learning all the time. So likely you will make a quote unquote better decision tomorrow than you would make today because you have more context.
Yeah.
And hopefully you've learned something. But I still like the decisions we made, even for all the personnel that was here that has either left for whatever reason they've left. Because I think while they were here, they were contributing and doing what we needed. And so, yeah, I mean, I guess I always question myself, could I have been smarter at that time? But the only answer to that is to invent a time machine. So I just, I don't look too much back on that. Plus, you know, and you know my career history, I've worked for a lot of different companies and a lot of different industries. I think that should be more the norm than, and yeah. I think it will be going forward more the norm than somebody working somewhere for 30 years. I think the pace of change is significant and it makes that fit equation have an important time component to it.
Yeah. And I don't beat myself up that much about hiring some of these people and being the wrong fit, so on and so forth, because quite frankly, you really don't know what a startup needs. And I still think of us as a startup, yeah. Right? I mean,
say you know everything we need right now?
No, I mean, almost 4 years in, I mean, you know, the way I think about business, especially after this year, is completely different than a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago. And so I don't beat myself up that I brought these people onto the team and it didn't work because you really don't know what you need. We're searching for a role right now that we want to fill that we don't even quite know what we need.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And but again, that's on it. That is honest, right? Expecting, I don't care if you're the CEO of a Fortune 500 company and you've been in the role for 10 years. I hope you have a learner's mindset to say, I don't know everything. And I need to learn so that I can fill this role or, you know, steer us in the right direction or whatever it may be. People who already have their mind made up, I don't know that I want to be on that bus.
Do you think if we weren't a growth-oriented or a growth-focused company, if we didn't care about growing, how many of those people would still be here? All the good human beings, because there's, I don't know, 10 or 12 from a staff perspective that people know, you know, they know their faces and names on Instagram and all
it's
that.
It's probably 50-50.
Yeah.
I would say half, even if we weren't trying to grow or change or whatever, I don't know that, I still think they could do something more impactful elsewhere.
Because they just didn't fit the role or the culture or
no,
what?
No. This is more, I'm sorry, I'm looking at it from the lens of them, not necessarily Turner Mining Group. Like, there's about half of them.
I think Stinton's the only one from staff that's willingly left, though. So you're not talking about a bunch of people that were like ready to go do their next thing.
I think if those people were...
A bunch of love to Zach Stinton, by the way.
Yes, of course. Love Zach.
Love and hate.
Well,
only one to ever leave. So love and hate.
No. I got nothing but love for Zach. For me, yes, maybe Zach was the only one that actually pulled the trigger to do that. I think there are people on staff that are no longer here that they were thinking about. I'm not doing what I want to do. I could do more.
They won't give me enough something different.
Whatever. And I think those half are gone. No matter what Turner Mining Group is doing, I think they're gone. I think the other half, sure, if we weren't trying to evolve as quickly as we're trying to evolve, yeah, maybe they're still here. But I bet it's 50-50.
Yeah. It's funny to me that I think of COVID really as a blessing. And I don't quite wake up and think of it that way yet, right? Because the world is still a
disaster.
Screwed up place.
Yeah.
But I really think of it as a blessing for us because I look back to January and I truly believe had we not went through COVID and sales, you know, year to year, sales are down 30% this year. They're down way more than our target. We were, this was going to be like the coming out year for us.
Sure.
Was my plan.
Sure. And you then, know. You know, there's a black swan market event that happens.
Right.
So that, you know, tends to throw a wrench.
But I think, you know, when I look at what COVID did to the industry and everyone just kind of pushed pause on everything, uh-huh. thank uh-huh. goodness we had plenty of backlog and still have plenty of backlog, uh-huh. but it wasn't what we planned for. I think it made us really take a hard look at every single detail of the
sure.
business.
Sure.
What works, what doesn't work. And before, we were making so much money and doing so much things that we didn't look at every detail. We were just looking at the big picture like, yeah, we're on a rocket ship.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think there's a learning in that for us as a company. But I also think maybe a bigger contributor is the people we've added to the team.
Agreed.
Where as we have added individuals to the team, I think they have raised the bar. I don't think it's a Keaton and Thomas thing. As a matter of fact, I think Keaton and Thomas are the two biggest limiting factors on Turner Mining Group.
Trying to change that.
Yeah, of course. And I think there are individuals that we have brought on in 2020.
Yeah.
COVID or no COVID. And they have pushed it higher such that even if we were, you know, still this rocket ship or whatever you want to call it, to me, I think they're raising the bar, and I shouldn't even call it raising the bar. Shifting the bar happens pretty much no matter COVID or not.
Yeah, we care about different things than we did pre-COVID. We were Thomas and I and a couple others were in Colorado last week and reviewing some annual plans.
Yeah.
Like, right, we're planning for 2021.
Yeah.
But we're looking back at our plans that we had for this year. And if you would have asked me going into those meetings what we had accomplished this year, I would say it's a total loss. This year, scrap the year. You know, we've learned a ton of lessons. But beyond that, like, we didn't knock it out of the park, in my perspective. So
And yet,
we looked back at our plans from 2020, or from 2019, sorry.
About
2020. Yeah. And we went down the list of all the things we wanted to get done in 2020. And I think there were only like 2 out of 10 things we had not accomplished.
Yeah.
Right? We wanted to add a senior vice president of mining. We just added the legit guy who, you know, he's awesome. Huge win for us. I didn't think a 3-year-old company could ever do that at a guy like that. And I think he's a rock star. You know, we added a Part 48 full turnkey contract mining site.
And so didn't know that we were going to be able to do that.
That was a big thing for us. And so there's a ton of big wins. They get overshadowed though. And this is the love hate thing I have with social media. It gets overshadowed by social media.
Of course.
It's all you hear on social media are the people that leave, and I'm no longer a Turner.
Yeah,
and
but that's okay.
Some of it's disgruntled, you know, few people disgruntled. Some of it's operator level people. Some of it's whatever. And you actually, as a business owner, start to buy into that yourself. You're like, wait a second. We were rocket ship in 2019, doing everything right by the book, which behind the scenes, we were doing everything wrong by the book.
Exactly.
But social media says you're doing everything right.
Sure.
This year, I think we've done more right than any of our other years combined.
Correct.
Social media doesn't think so. They don't see that.
And that's right. I'd rather be the underrated person or company or whatever than the one that is truly overrated.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think I like love college basketball. And so like there were always chants of like overrated, like from the stands, like towards the court.
Wofford.
Right. And I never want to hear that chant. Right. I never want to hear overrated. I would love that people keep underrating you and yet you are performing.
Yeah. You're the play-in team for March Madness. You're Wofford that ends up, you know, winning three or four games.
Exactly.
But
exactly.
I think it's really one of the questions we had was, you know, when do you know the right time to invest in systems and all these things? And they went on to talk about software and all these things. And so fast forward to this year, right? Because previous, and I don't know how many people really know me that well, I am a danger to the business, right? People in the office call me a cowboy. I go win work and negotiate deals kind of behind the scenes with a client, and the ops team is left to put all the pieces together and figure out how to go do it.
Oh, yeah.
And it drives people crazy. So I don't do that a whole lot anymore. But it's a really interesting question because I'm not a systems guy.
No.
I'm not very organized. I don't really care about the details. We just did a little exercise where we evaluated ourselves and the chart showed I was big picture and I really struggle with details, which, you know, I'm a sales guy through and through. I'm not a mining guy. I'm like sales and marketing. And so, you know, the question is really interesting because I think if we don't have COVID this year, I don't think we've done anywhere near the amount of systems and optics that we've implemented this year. I mean, think about what our operations team is doing now with data.
Yeah, but I think that's the people. My answer to that question is, when do you know it's time to invest in systems? When your people tell you it is time to invest in systems.
So true.
Like, it's why I made the comment of, I think you and I are the biggest cap on the business or on the potential of the business. If the only ideas come from Keaton's head or Thomas's head, I guarantee we fail.
If we're the smartest guys in the room, it's a bad room. It's a pretty dumb room, really. I mean, you're a smart guy. But if you and I are the two people in the room,
bad room
building a mining business,
I would agree.
That's not a very smart mining room. You know, I'm doing air quotes.
Yeah, well, and I'm not a mining guy. You've already said you're not a mining guy. But even beyond industry experience or anything like that, you have a set of experiences that shape the way you think. And no offense, but you've only lived one life, and that one life only has those set of experiences in them. Same thing for me. If those two lives or sets of experience are the only things that are making a decision for a company, that is super dangerous. And so to me, when I think about systems, I obviously think about people that are a lot smarter than you and me in systems. And like Betts, Alan, even Patton.
Yeah, we've got this guy named Alan who he came to us as an intern, right?
Yep.
An MBA intern. He was getting his master's. And, you know, he kind of tiptoed around the office for a while and didn't say or do much. He was just taking it all in. Well, he became a full-time employee. And then it was like off to the races.
Oh, yeah.
Alan is going to change everything.
Yeah, dude's legit.
And I think that plays to your response, which is Alan sat down and said, this is everything you need to know about your business, and here's the data, and here's why you should care about it. Because I didn't care about the data, right? I cared about how many jobs did we won, how many yards did we move today, how many people did we hire, you know?
Which there are systems for that, right? Like, and it's not to say if you're a business owner,
but you got to get someone's brain that thinks about the systems for that.
Correct. And it's not to say that you as a business owner just throw out all your ideas. That's not what I'm saying either, because I think you, Keaton, have a ton of ideas of how we can be successful, and we have to incorporate those. I hope I do too, right? But to me, it's just not letting that be a limiting factor. And so if you have questions and want to see information, you should probably look at systems as an answer to that. But beyond that, when do you know? It's either you have so many questions that you can't get answers to, or your people are saying, hey, I can't give you an answer because I don't have visibility into whatever I'm looking for. So I think it's kind of like, you know, when you know, which is a horrible answer, but I think it's the fairest one we could give.
Yeah. And what did we specifically not like? What's one of the things that Alan, because I want to give some real context to the people that listen to this, because like I've said in the past, I only really care about our own employees listening to this. Everyone else is just kind of cherry on the top. So,
well, it, I mean, it's what happened? That way.
Yeah, I mean, what happened when Alan was like, "Hey guys, I'm recognizing this is a problem because I'm thinking about operations, which is where he's focused a ton of his energy."
Yeah,
right. We know exactly how many yards we move every day as a company across the country.
Oh, yeah.
We know, for the most part, I think now, how many dollars and cents we've made every single day across the country.
Yep.
That's stuff we didn't know 6 months ago.
No. Now, should we have maybe? It was a whole other thing. Should. Yeah. To me, what Alan brings... And actually, Betzler and Patton, and there's several, right?
Smart people that think about systems.
They when they realize there is a thing that moves the needle for the company, they immediately want to get access to that thing, right? That's the kind of mentality that I think Alan has leveled all of us up on, which is, okay, guys, I hear you, but if that's the thing you care about, well, then why aren't we tracking it or measuring it or getting visibility to it in the way that not just works for today, but just works, right? Yeah. Where you just have to stop thinking about
it. Yeah, one of our biggest problems in 2019, because we had so many projects and so much happening. There was new projects starting every week, new people. We were hiring 20 people a week, it seemed like back then. And so one of the problems we had was you'd get a project and it wouldn't perform, and you'd get the monthly financials, right? And it's the project's lost 100 grand, whatever.
Yep.
And you'd get it another month, and it's lost 100 grand. And you couldn't pinpoint why.
Exactly.
Right? Like, do we have an equipment problem? Do we have the wrong people there? Did the bid, is the estimate not accurate?
Or the scope change.
The scope change. Yeah, all these things. When you know every single day that the project's losing money, you can then... the next day, not a month later, the next day make some changes.
Yeah.
And I think that, to me, is one real specific example of systems changing how we do business.
Sure. And again, I'll go back to people too, because there are people like McClelland, like Bobby, like Alan, like Patton, who they're just asking those questions anyways. Jake now asks more questions about what's happening day to day on the equipment side than he did 6 months ago. And partly that's because we've been asking questions of Jake, but partly that's because Jake's realizing, oh, wait, I need to start asking these questions. And that's kind of that shift that I'm talking about. I think the systems enable it, but the people are the ones that are going to drive it. And I don't want anybody to get the wrong idea that systems kind of have all the answers. They can just enable people to then have all the answers.
Yeah, I completely agree. A couple other questions here that I want to get to.
Yeah.
Because I mean, we can sit and talk about systems all day and people all day.
There's plenty. And by the way, if anybody like wants to like look up Alan is on LinkedIn, you know, like send him a message. I mean, he's got stories for days, so happy to lend him as a support mechanism for you guys.
He's a great guy. And yeah. I think the theme for me, as it regards to Alan specifically, is hire people who are really good at what you're not good at.
Exactly.
That's one of the reasons why I love you so much. You and I are opposites. Our minds think a little bit the same and where we want to go big level.
Sure.
You're super organized and detailed, and I'm not, you know? And... I don't know. I was on a podcast, I actually just put it in my Instagram story, The Climb, and these guys, we talked almost the whole time about, you know, finding people who are better at things your business needs than you are.
Oh yeah.
Cause I think there are a ton of small business. This is a weird thought. There are a ton of small business owners out there who, if they just hired their replacement, that business would flourish.
100%.
Boom.
100%.
But they're so caught up in, I'm the business owner.
Yeah.
It's mine.
Yeah.
They got the ego, right? And I got an ego. But you got to realize when to replace yourself with people that are smarter.
Well, I mean, business owners especially, I mean, what, like, if your business does better because you go down path A rather than path B. Shouldn't you go down path A? You own the business.
And I think people at every management level make the mistake of thinking they have to have the answers, right? We just told our staff here just a few weeks ago, you do not have to. People were thinking when we would come into a meeting, we'd sit down, we'd come into a meeting, we'd lay out all this data and all these optics that we have now, right? And we would see a problem. And we would ask someone, what's going on with this problem? They felt the pressure. I have to have an answer.
Yeah.
Right? The execs are asking me what's going on. I have to know. Well, it's okay to not know.
Absolutely. As a matter of fact, saying, hey, I don't know what's going on here, that's a good thing, because then
I would rather hear that than the wrong answer.
Oh, 100%.
Oh, I know what's going on, but it's not really the thing that's the problem.
100%. And then specifically on the I don't know side, we can then mobilize to figure out what's going on. If somebody says they know what's going on, do you think you and I are going to think 1 second further about that thing? No, we're going to move on to the next file.
We're going to trust they know what's going on.
Exactly. And so if someone truly doesn't know, I absolutely want them to say that. And then the question is, okay, how can we get to us knowing, right? And maybe it's not even for that person to know. Maybe it's actually somebody else that should be providing that person whatever it is that needs to be known. I just, there's a lot in.
You and I have both done Stegan, which is a year-long, 52-week course on leadership and how to be better leaders.
Sure. Right?
And one of the things they teach in Stegan is mindsets. There's all kinds of different mindsets people have. Right now, it seems like the world has a victim mindset. Mm-hmm. That's for a different podcast. I won't even go there. Mm-hmm. But one of the mindsets that we have been guilty of in our company, our staff specifically, is a knower's mindset, yes. Right? People, because they are hired to do something, they have to know exactly what they're doing.
Exactly.
And it's a huge mistake I think so many people make. You should have a learner's mindset.
Yep.
The smartest people in the world are people that learn every day. They're not people that teach everyone else every day.
No.
They learn every day.
Correct.
And it's something that I'm super aware of. I want to learn every day. There are days where I come in here and I try to spit knowledge on things that I don't know about. Thankfully, I got people like you and Pat to call me out and say, wait a second, do you know this? Yeah. Or is that just your opinion?
Yep.
Because I'm very opinionated.
Sure. Well, and we all are.
Managers, I think, and I'm super guilty of this, managers all have a knower's mindset instead of a learner's mindset. And it's so counterproductive to really moving things forward.
I love that you said the smartest people in the world have a learner's mindset. That is dead on. If I think, there are so many examples of this, but I mean, you can think of people in the kind of business world, like a Simon Sinek, right? Yep. That guy is trying to learn every single day.
Yep.
And he writes another book when he learns something else, right? I think about real legit professors, right, that never stop researching. They might teach a class, but they're also doing a tremendous amount of research on the side, right? I just think the more that could get brought into a business's day-to-day, I know you do that. You read all the time.
Yep.
Why do you read? Because you're trying to learn something. Right? It's not that difficult. Why do you watch a documentary instead of some fictional movie? Because you're trying to learn something. By the way, even in fictional movies, maybe you can learn things. But like, there's just this approach to, well, of course I might be able to get something out of this. Right? There is so much power behind that. And I think the examples of people who do that are the people who just never stop moving. Yeah.
I've been so guilty, and I've caught myself doing this lately because I'm reading some books about how to catch yourself doing it. And you sit down to a meeting and you're going to tell the person that you're meeting with all these things, right? And you just don't do a whole lot of listening. You don't really get their perspective.
Yeah.
You don't learn anything new. You walk out of a meeting, you don't learn anything new. You did not have a learner's mindset.
Well, and you probably didn't have a good meeting.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't learn something new in a meeting, that then means, okay, I didn't make progress personally, right? So now maybe there are some scenarios where you know what needs to happen, but even those are the, I'll come back to my comment earlier about, somebody being a fit for 30 years. I know you don't even think you are a fit
I'm
for
not,
30
I'm
years.
Not a fit for 30 years.
And so my
if I can make it 15, I'll feel like I've really evolved as a person.
And so my point is there is so much awareness in that and a true learner's mindset in that. And it's like, okay, well, if that's the case, if the business owner is saying, hey, I might not be a fit for 30 years, like I think people should be okay with that. And I think that's because you and our whole team have a vision for Turner Mining Group that goes well beyond just Keaton. And when there's a vision like that, the company will evolve and change and continue progress. And that's why I just think the norm will be there's a fit for a period of time.
So it leads me into my next question, because I feel pretty strongly about this. If I could go back, or if you could go back, I'm going to answer this first and then get your opinion. If we could go back to when we started in 2017, you came on in 2018.
Yep.
If we could go back to when we started this company, I want you to think for a few minutes, what would you do differently? Now, knowing everything that we know, where we're at, the people changes, the kind of the pivot as a business, and where there are certain services that we don't want to do anymore, right?
Correct.
Because they don't make money.
Correct.
There are certain parts of the country we don't want to work anymore because it's really tough. I think I'm going to answer first. Go. The one thing I would do differently, I would hire, and I believe this with all my heart. I've never even told Gant this, the other part of the company, the other owner of the company. I would go back and hire someone to run the company for the first 3 years so that I could learn from them and not learn all the things that I learned at the expense of not only cash, right?
Because
I spent a ton of cash learning, and I'm cool with that, but there's also a ton of people that I think we could have positioned in different ways to be effective.
Sure.
There were people I wouldn't steal from other companies and kind of uproot their lives only for a year later for it not to work out, which I feel guilty about sometimes. And so I don't know. I think like this couple of people we just added to the team, had we added them in 2017 and I learned from them,
but
I'd probably be a better leader right now.
I think that is, it's an interesting observation. I challenge it though, because part of me says, there ain't no way you're attracting that person 3 years ago or those individuals 3 years ago. And then what that means is what you've done has actually attracted them. So it's why I tend to not look back so much, because we couldn't have gotten the people that we have gotten without doing and learning the things that we have done and learned.
It's the chicken and egg thing.
Exactly.
Ben and I talk about this all the time. Do you go win the $100+ million contract first, or do you go hire the people to do the $100 million contract? It's like, how are you going to hire the people to do it? What are they coming here to do, right? If you don't have the thing.
Exactly.
And it's the same. It's a good point. That's why I think there are so many companies that don't do that. They don't just, you don't start up a company and hire the legit
person. And then the problem is, can you get it right? Because have you learned enough to evaluate them? So the one side is like, okay, but what you have done has mattered and has made the fit with that person, right? They're interested in you, you're interested in them. But then think on the evaluation side. So you know what you want in that person right now. In 2017, I don't know that you would have hired the right person.
Because you didn't learn all the lessons.
Exactly. And so it's an interesting thought experiment. Mine actually would be, it's maybe in the same vein. I would be slower to hire. And what I mean by that is,
you were the fastest guy to hire in the world.
I know. And on some of them, I have gotten it amazingly right. And on some of them, I've gotten it amazingly wrong. And I think,
what's our percentage, if you had to guess, right to wrong hires?
I'll say for a short window, because we change so much in 6 months, it's really hard to look well beyond that. For the first 6 months, I bet we're 2 to 1 we get it right.
Okay.
Now, the problem is we change pretty quickly, so that, you know, at the year or two-year mark, might be 1 to 1.
Yeah.
Right? But what I mean by slower to hire, So let's think if you don't hire somebody, what happens? It means you have to find a way to get that job done currently, right? Like without that extra person. I think there's actually a lot of learning that's in that for any organization that you really need to learn what that is before you make the hire. We were on such a growth trajectory. We would find out we needed something and boom, go hire for it.
And assume they knew how to fix the thing we needed to fix.
Exactly. Whereas if you or I would have dedicated the amount of time saying, no, I'm going to do that job for the next month. I'm going to learn what it takes to do this job, and then I'm going to evaluate off of that. I think that would be, I think that's my biggest takeaway. It's a higher, slower.
Yeah, it's a great point because I truly believe one of the issues that we've had is we put too much faith in our hiring the right person.
Yeah, exactly.
You get them here, and we just say go, right? Yep. Everything's on fire everywhere. Yep. We need people here tomorrow. We're flying people there. We need equipment there. There is so much happening that we just plug people into problems thinking they're going to fix the problem.
Yep.
And then when they don't, we're like, nah, scrap that person, get rid of them. We're going to hire another person to put them
in.
And so we did a lot of that.
Oh, yeah.
And I think we did a lot of it probably in 2019, and we got to 2020, and we said, hey, we've got really good people now, right? We have a bunch of smart people. We've got a bunch of good human beings. But the problem, the root of the problem
has not gone away.
It's never been addressed.
Yep.
And we didn't have optics. We didn't have processes and systems to show us how to fix the problem. We were just hoping a person, and geez, bless their hearts, the people that were trying to fix the problem didn't even necessarily know what the root of the problem was.
Well, and part of that is, again, I'm back to our evaluation. Were we even asking them that? Probably not.
Yeah.
So that to me is, that's why it's my biggest takeaway. I would hire slower. I would force you or I, or maybe somebody like Patton, or maybe somebody like Alan, to actually do the job.
Scrappy.
And then once we've done the job and figured out what it is, if it's unsustainable, then you go hire the person.
Yeah, we got big fast, and we got a little bit less scrappy. We were like, we're not going to scrap to figure out what this, we're not going to scratch and claw to figure out what this problem is. We're going to go hire someone who we think has solved this problem.
And partly because we had a bigger fire over there that we needed to go address. And we're just like, okay.
Sometimes literally.
Yeah. And it, unfortunately. And that, again, that's kind of the growth challenge. I was listening to a podcast. This is probably maybe 6 months ago. Reid Hoffman does the Masters of Scale one, right?
It's a great podcast.
Great podcast. Anybody out there, look it up. Like, if you're a business owner, you should probably listen to it. He did one where one of the founders was slow to hire, purposeful. He interviewed every single candidate. He knew exactly what they needed them to do. And he hired, I think, literally the first 250 people to join their company.
I remember that one. Yeah.
Insane story. There is a ton of wisdom in that. The podcast goes on to talk primarily about culture and fit and all those types of things. Very valuable. Don't want to undersell that. But I think just the mentality of being slow to hire can be really powerful.
Yeah. To me, I think of, if you're slow to hire, you're probably slow to grow, which you know me, I'm
but
not
again,
into that.
I know. But again, I mean, this startup, they're very quick to grow, right? Yeah. And he just made the decision. We are going to have to figure it out and get scrappy until we find the right person.
Yeah.
And I'm going to know really, really well. And I'm sure their ratio is better than 2-1. Right. I'm sure their ratio is like 9-1.
Yeah.
Which is all that's the thing you're trying to move.
Talking about culture, because there's several people no longer here for culture reasons, mostly field people, right? The culture has changed.
Yeah. I was say on the staff side,
not on the staff side. But do you think, and I've tossed this idea around in my head several times because our culture has changed, right? In my opinion, a startup has to have a different culture than where we're at now.
Yeah. Well, for a lot of reasons, but yes, I think culture evolves with the business. I'm sure I've said it on some podcast before and I can't remember which one, but I use the analogy that culture is like a shark. If it's not swimming forward, it's dying. And really what that is getting at is culture needs to continue to evolve with the company, with the market around the company, with the people in the company. And so as those things continue to evolve, the culture needs to keep moving forward and be different than it was yesterday.
And I don't think for one minute it's a problem that people who had originally signed up here came on for the culture and then saw it go somewhere else and they said, you know what, it's not what I...
Oh, yeah.
I'm no longer into that, because those people, honestly... Like if I'm one of those person, you know, operators who signed up originally for the, I'll say Instagram culture, right? The cool kids,
sure.
Right? Like, because we're the Instagram company.
Yeah,
that's not what I want to be. I do not want to be the Instagram. I don't care if Instagram goes away tomorrow. I don't care if we delete our Instagram tomorrow.
We're not going to delete our Instagram tomorrow.
I am very conscious of the types of people that you really want to build a company around. And I hold no ill will to people who originally signed up for something and we just outgrew that stage of our culture. Because I think there are definitely stages. Now, I don't think when you become big corporate with different rules, because we got a lot more rules than we used to have.
That's true.
You get sued a few times, you got to have more rules. That's just the way it works. But I don't feel like you have to become this big stale corporate culture thing just because you get bigger as a company.
No. And I mean, there's so much to unpack in this. There's different phases of a business. There are all these books about phases of companies and life cycles of companies, right? And you want to hold on to the peak as long as possible, right? Before you kind of hit the slide on the other side. So, but there is a trudge up the mountain. Right. And so as you're trudging up the mountain, at the bottom of the mountain, it's a lot different than midway up the mountain, and it's a lot different than at the top of the mountain. Right. And so I think culture changes with that, and what people are looking for experience wise, what they're looking for team wise, what the expectations are of themselves as contributors. I mean, that all evolves, and that all goes into culture. So to me, again, I mean, if somebody comes and expects the culture to stay the exact same, no, what you really need to align with is the trajectory.
Yeah.
So it's like, where is this going? Is that where I want to go for at least the next, I don't know, 3-ish, maybe 5-ish years?
If the company is not heading the direction you want to take your career, shouldn't be with that company.
No, don't join.
Especially a growing company, right? A lot of companies aren't necessarily... it's not a goal of theirs to grow.
Correct.
Like, they're happy with the company
they are. They have a trajectory aligned with that.
Exactly. But if especially growth oriented companies, because things change.
Oh yeah.
Right. And it's funny, you know, as we started to implement more rules, more processes, we started to push more responsibility out into the field. I would say to the project managers, mm-hmm. half of them wanted it. They were desperately wanting to know every single.
Begging us for it.
Yeah. They wanted to know how their project was performing financially. Others, they didn't want to be bothered by what, you know, all the costs. Oh, I have to approve invoices now. Oh, yeah. I have to report these numbers now. And it was just more for them to do.
Sure.
To me, you know, it's there's a saying, and I'm gonna botch it, but it's basically like mediocrity hates overachievers, right?
Of course.
Mediocre people and overachievers, you put two of them in a room, they do not get along.
Correct.
They can't stand each other.
Overachievers also hate mediocrity too.
And we got a bunch of that.
And
there's nothing wrong with what I would consider a mediocre person, whether they're an operator, project manager, whatever. The companies need tons of them.
Sure.
But you can't put them next to someone who's on fire to go kill it.
Yep.
And I've learned that lesson.
Oh, yeah. And I think... what's interesting is there are people who have been able to make the shift. And I think about folks where you kind of look at them and you go, I don't know that they're really going to be hungry for this. And they're some of the ones that are the most on fire about it.
Yeah.
And so it's not always apparent kind of how that's going to play out. But I think it's true. You know, those two things tend to not mix very well.
No, they don't. It's and I think there are people who have looked at some of our folks on Instagram who are no longer here, wondering, well, you know, why is that person not here?
Right.
And to me, if I could just, you know, answer in a blanket statement, they wanted their career to go in a different place. The company had career availability to go for those specific people.
Yeah. And I would even just say where the company was headed and where that individual was headed did not align.
Yeah.
Whether it's career, personal, I mean, there's so much that goes into working for a company that I think people just underrepresent.
Yeah. And when you give people the responsibility at an early stage of a business, right? The business back then, our business, we needed different things from people.
Absolutely, we did. Yeah.
So we could give them a certain amount of responsibility and they killed it.
Yep.
When you get to be a different size business, a lot bigger now than we used to be, you need different things from those roles. And some people don't take demotions lightly, right? They don't want to be pushed back into a certain role. Whereas, you know, that role may be an awesome role, and maybe we don't even change your pay. It's not really a demotion.
Correct.
Other than just the title change. But certain people, they see that or hear that. Oh, wait, I'm no longer this. You're going to bump me back to this.
But that's like, learner versus knower.
That is
literally back to the same thing you just said. So sorry for the shortcut on learner versus knower, but like that's somebody saying, I know it all, and so I shouldn't be demoted. We have other people in our company that, and I hate using the word demoted, but have said, I want a boss.
Ben, just call it out. Just say Ben.
Yeah, but it's not even just Ben. Yeah. I think you hear that from Patton. I think there are several people in this organization who say, hey, I don't know everything. I see where this company is going. I want to be a part of where it's going. And what that means is I need someone. Because Keaton and Thomas, you're not giving me enough. Because that's really what they're saying.
Yeah,
that's really what Ben's saying. It's really what Patton says. Like, they say, I need more than what you are giving me. And the only way we're going to get to where we need to go is that I am willing to take a demotion. I did air quotes on that. It's just not really a demotion. It's saying, hey, we're leveling up. I want to level up personally, and the way to do that is to give me the person that can be my mentor, be my coach, be my boss day to day. And that is a learner's mindset. It's when you say you're not going to necessarily be with the CEO of the company 30 years from now. That's a legit statement.
Well, I so wish that people could really let that sink in, everything you just said, because I think there would be people here today that are not here who, had they taken the mentorship approach, saying, I need a mentor,
sure,
they would still be here. And quite frankly, they would be on a better career path than they are wherever they are.
I don't know, though.
Here's the difference. I could sit here with my name on everything, my last name's on all the trucks and the doors and everything, and say,
my
you know
shirt.
What? I know it. I've built a sexy company. We've got an awesome brand, and I'm gonna kick back. Instead, I've realized my own deficiencies. I should not be coaching Ben. I should not be Ben's mentor, right?
Yep.
I can give Ben a little guidance. I should not be Jake's mentor. I'm not an equipment expert.
Yeah, no.
You know, what I've decided to do is join a group of executives who are way more legit than I am. One of them, he's got 10,000 employees.
Yeah.
The guy on paper is a billionaire.
Right.
I want to learn from those people. I just truly believe, and that is not a humble brag thing for me to say, I just truly believe when people are not consciously making the decision to get better, whether it's a mentor or a boss or a manager, whoever, and some people have bad bosses, right? Maybe you don't learn from that boss.
And a lot of bosses are bad.
I am sitting here saying that I think people that want to learn every day just ultimately go farther.
They do. They will. Whether they have a bad boss or not, they will. And it's funny. I want to come back to your comment about some folks who have left. I think there are some that if they really ask themselves the question, what they wanted to learn wasn't even at Turner Mining Group. Like that, and that's why I said to you, well, maybe not all of them, right? Like, I think some are genuinely better off because the things they want to learn, we're not going to do. Maybe ever.
Yeah.
And so it's like, again, it's back to the aligning. Okay, where is this company going and what are they trying to achieve? And what am I trying to achieve and where am I going?
I had one guy ask me the question, how did you grow so fast and when did you stop operating machines and go straight to the office?
Keaton never operated a machine.
I haven't operated a machine. I drove haul trucks when I was back in college, late high school and college, but that's...
Yeah, but not for... Well, not for us. Not for us.
Not for us. And I don't... I think there's a big myth out there because there's a ton of business owners on Instagram who are kind of what I would consider owner-operators, right?
Yeah.
They came from the operating world. You know, they were an operator and they decided they're going to run a business. I have never been a guy that wanted to be an operator. I didn't have a problem. I love equipment, right? And I'll jump into something and try not to tear it up. But I live for running a business.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think people that are fantastic operators should not be people that are running a business.
Correct.
Even if you got an amazing business idea, maybe you should be an amazing operator and hire someone to run your business.
Exactly.
And you keep all the equity, fine, no big deal.
Yeah.
But I can tell you right now, if I were going to run a golf company, whatever the golf company is,
yep,
I am not the guy that's running a golf company.
No.
I like golf as a hobby. I could not run it as a business. So...
It's interesting. And what I would say is you can also flip that around too. I think there are some people that are operating that are business owners because they're kind of afraid to let their hands off the sticks. And there might be a better operator than you out there.
Yeah.
And maybe you should stick to running the business and you should put somebody in that seat. Like that's
so true.
It's the other flip.
If I jump on site to load trucks,
yeah,
we lose money that day.
Exactly. And no offense, Keaton, that's a bad day, right? Yeah. McCollum would be pissed.
I don't need people showing my videos on Instagram of me trying to load trucks and look like an idiot. I already look like an idiot most of the time. Yeah. Anyway,
we gotta also limit the days Witt is on site too.
He's bangs days, tailgates sometimes.
Well, I know, and those are days we lose money.
Yeah. Well. That there's several times I wanted to jump in something and I thought, to jump in it probably cost me $1,000 in lost production. So
absolutely it does.
Aaron, I'm okay if he loses $1,000 because he gets $1,000 worth of sweet pictures.
Yeah.
But I should not jump in equipment.
No.
There are a ton of questions here. Let me find another good one. How much was your initial startup cost? I answered this one a little bit on Instagram the other day in the story. Because people, that's a real question. There's a lot of people that want to start their own business that listen to this. And some of them could be truck drivers or operators or whatever.
Yeah.
What's the initial startup cost? And so I look back and my original response via Instagram was, you know, our startup costs weren't really, it wasn't really money, right? You buy a pickup truck or two.
Yeah.
You know, to me, the startup cost was zero at first because we didn't do anything until we had won a contract.
Yeah.
I didn't have employees. I didn't buy pickup trucks. I went out and sold our business to people who would pay us to do something. And when we got a contract, I said, cool, now I need a pickup truck.
Yep.
Now I need five people.
Yep.
Now I need to rent machines for this price. And I need to go execute. And it's just arbitrage, right? If people don't know what that word is, it's you're committing to a price and you're trying to come in under that price and you're going to make the delta up in profit.
Exactly.
That's a bad definition of arbitrage. No, but it's a concept thing.
It's good.
And so now I look at what were our startup costs. I would say our startup costs, we still pay for them because we still have projects that we won 2 years ago.
Absolutely.
That are startup costs, bad equipment deals. Bad managers, not bad managers, the wrong managers.
Yep.
Good, probably good people, but the wrong managers.
Definitely good people.
My startup costs were my own learning curve, right? Exactly. I didn't know how to run a business.
Yeah.
My startup costs were learning all the mistakes to run a business. I didn't know what I needed systems for and optics into and dashboard. I didn't know I needed a dashboard for production. I thought I could just look at how many loads they get today. And if we get over this number, we make money.
Yeah.
Turns out that's not the case.
No.
Definitely. You could get a lot more loads than your target and still lose money.
Absolutely.
For a million different reasons.
Do you, I'll flip the question because I actually agree with your answer. I think it's not, it's the startup costs are so short term, it's irrelevant.
Super irrelevant.
So if somebody is sitting here saying,
unless you're buying a business or something, but fine. If you're starting, yeah.
But you're going to borrow the money to buy a business.
Right.
Like, no offense. I mean, maybe there are people out there that are going to write $20 million checks. But my thing is, if you're buying a business for $20 million, you're getting a bank loan to buy a business for $20 million. So it's not even your money.
Yeah, or investors or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so to me, I like your answer. All the quote-unquote costs that are going through someone's mind are irrelevant. My question, kind of adding to that one, is when do you think you stop paying startup costs?
Oh, man. That's a great question. When do you stop paying startup costs? I would like to hope there is a day, but I'm starting to wonder if there's ever a day.
See?
I
think that's a real answer. I think...
Especially if you're learning, it comes at an expense. Learning comes at an expense of something.
That is right? The expense. Learning is the expense, and I don't know that people necessarily get that. I think about all the marketing we've done and spent money on, right? With internal people all across the board, and people are like, "Oh, like that's a lot of money." It's like, yeah, we're trying to learn a lot of stuff. What do people like? What company do they want to join? What do clients like? What company do they want to hire? Right? Like every single thing in a business is about learning. And I don't know, you know, whether you want to call that quote unquote startup cost or not, whatever. But to me.
Yeah. Two years down the road, whatever the startup costs were, it's irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Whether it's 20 million or 200,000 or 20,000. If you're not learning the lessons quickly, you don't have a business. You just,
right.
I think there was a kid that worked for us, great dozer man, and came in one day and said, hey, I'm going to start my own company. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to, mm-hmm. Do dozer work for people. And he kind of asked somewhat of the similar question, you know, what are the costs? How do you think about starting a business? So on and so forth. You just do it. You just jump in. There's never a right time.
No.
You're never going to learn enough lessons.
Nope.
You're never going to know enough to do starting a, air quotes, you're never going to know enough to do starting a business perfectly. It's bad grammar, but there's no right way, right?
I think there's no right way. Even
the fifth, let's say you and I are lucky enough to live for another 50 years and we have 10 more businesses that we've impacted between now and then.
Sure.
The 10th business, we're not going to be perfect at starting it and running it and operating it and knowing what we should know. You know, that's a great question. I don't know that you ever finish paying startup costs.
I don't think you do.
I think if you hire someone,
again,
they're learning.
That's my point.
Or they should be. If they're not, it's even more dangerous than if they are.
Because I would argue if you think you still have no learning costs, you aren't looking in the right place. You might say, oh, I've got this figured out, or oh, I, you know, this is dialed in. And that's awesome. All about that. If you think you have no learning costs, I bet you do. You just don't know where they are.
I think the real question is, how do you cash flow your learning costs?
That's a good question. Yeah. One, bank.
Yeah.
Get a good relationship with a local bank, right? Especially in small business. Local banks are the backbone of small business. Right. Yep. And they take a lot of risk on, frankly, sometimes some crazy ideas, but
with the right relationship,
right relationship at a small bank, that is probably the single largest unlock to cash flowing early learning.
Yeah. If no relationship, they don't even care you exist.
No. Yeah. You need the
relationships are key.
Yeah.
On a lot of different levels, but especially banking.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I agree with that. But that's a great, I mean, that's the way to phrase it. How do you cash flow the learning costs, the startup costs?
Yeah.
And to me, I mean, of course, I get super leery of people trying to start. There's people that have come to me and want to start a business and they don't really know how to make money, right? Like if you can't take a deck of baseball cards and go make money, that's how I would boil it down, right? Pokemon cards from your closet from 20 years ago.
Whatever.
If you can't take something that you have laying around and go make money, more money than what you have invested in the thing, if Pokemon cards cost you $100, go sell them for $200.
Yep.
If you can do that at scale, you have a chance at running a business. Correct. If you can't even do that, don't even think about business, because there's so many other details beyond just trying to make money that will kill you. They will just kill you.
Yeah.
Relationships, understanding people, thinking about mindsets, you know,
cash flow,
cash flow, finances, like, not even considering all the technical aspects of running the business, the technical aspects of your service. You know, are you a master at, you know, mining, or do you have a master, someone that has mastered mine? You know, there. So to me, it's super simple from a concept. You're going to learn and pay for it forever. Go make more money and profit than your learning costs are.
Yes.
Otherwise you have a problem. Yeah. You've got to cash flow because your customers aren't paying.
Yeah. They aren't paying as quickly as you're likely learning.
At least in this industry, some industries.
Yeah.
Sometimes in a consumer industry, maybe not.
Yeah. But again, manufacturing time, lead times, sales cycles. There's a lot there too that you got to cash flow.
What are some warning signs or bad vibes that you look for in making a deal? And they don't specify what the deal is. It could be a person. It could be an equipment dealer. It could be a client, because we've made plenty of bad deals with clients.
I got one on this. Lack of clarity.
Yeah.
If people cut to, I get it, we're good, and you don't feel clear, that should be a sign.
Yeah.
They're either A, taking you, which could be the case, or B, you potentially still have misalignment in what the deal is. Person, vendor, client, doesn't matter. And I think if people try to shortcut that clarity, that should raise up some red flags. And it might not even be like purposefully or intentionally malicious.
Yeah.
Right.
Clarity is the best word, because there are people that we have given an offer letter to, right? And they come on board, and a year later, right? Let's say it's bonus time.
Uh-huh.
And they don't get the bonus that they thought they were going to get in their mind. And we're sitting here saying, well, we actually gave you more of a bonus than what we thought you were expecting to get.
Yep.
But their offer letter is not clear, right?
Yep.
It doesn't say X dollars.
Correct.
It may be vague. It may say you can get anywhere from this to that.
Yep.
And there's no real clarity in how they get, you know, the low end of the bonus or the high end.
That's correct.
Same thing with client. We have a client right now who we gave an awesome proposal to. In my mind, it was an awesome proposal. It was a fairly good size one, 15 or 20 million bucks a couple years ago. And we're still doing it. And there's this one real unique line in the proposal that says, if we are able to do this, you save this amount of money.
Yep.
And we have not been able to do that for a lot of reasons.
Sure.
Right? It's out of our control most of the time.
Yeah.
And the client's thinking they were getting that. They were going to save $1 million, right? If the stars aligned, they would save $1 million. Uh-huh. Well, the stars didn't align.
Well, and there's a ton of market forces on things like that. I mean, there's a lot.
But right? It was not clear in our favor or their favor.
Yeah, correct. And to me, that's why I come back to clarity. And I don't know that you can ever write every scenario down. And I don't know, but on at least the big things, the things you care about and the things they care about, you need clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. To me, that's the one word. I mean, that's the fundamental, and it's what we've learned now with contracts, because we are a contractor. We live and die by the words on paper.
Exactly.
Which I'm not a fan of. I'm the type of guy that I want to call the purchasing gal or the plant manager or the decision maker and work a deal over a phone call or over text messages.
Yep.
And I've got us in so much trouble.
No.
Because what I've got in my mind, how the contract is going to, you know, be constructed and what they have in their mind doesn't come out on paper all the time. Well, at least used to.
Yeah, and I think part of that also is we deal with very large organizations as clients. And so even the decision maker, literally the person who's making the decision, even they have stakeholders that they have to manage. So if the decision maker is a VP or a general manager or somebody really high up in the organization, yeah, I want you having a conversation with them. The kicker is they don't own the legal department. Right. And so the legal department is going to say, well, no, Mr. VP or Ms. GM, like, not going to happen. We need to have this, this, and this in there. So even if what they want, and even if what they're willing to agree to is something that aligns with us, we got to also make sure that those other stakeholders are clear as well.
Yeah.
Because that's the hard part. Right. And I'm thinking about a current client where they're like, yeah. This one's kind of out of my hands, right? This one's in legal. And it's like, okay, well, let's see how they read this.
Yeah.
Right. And I don't know. It just kind of is what it is at that point.
Yeah. Well, and you know, when I get something now has anything to do with legal, I just forward it to you guys and, you know.
Yeah. And even Gant and I get ourselves in trouble, right? Like it's not, I think, you know, partly I've worked at some large companies and that helps me kind of navigate some of that stuff. Gant literally is a lawyer that helps us kind of navigate some stuff. So I think, but there are plenty of times where Gant and I say, we don't know. Pass it to somebody
else. I think that friction is healthy. Cause I hate the way lawyers think about things. Like this shouldn't be that complicated. Let's just go get it done.
And it shouldn't be.
And when there are problems, we'll work it out. We've realized it doesn't always work that way.
Yeah. And the other, and again, I'll come back to the multiple stakeholder thing because I don't think it's Mr. VP or Ms. G. I don't think it's them doing anything malicious.
At our level. Yeah, at our stage.
No, they're not. They're
big corporations, that's true.
It's hard because they can't control the entire thing. Now, if you're a business owner, what I would say is you've heard everything that Keaton has said. If you truly do control all the things and you own a business, how do you want to run your business? I don't like running it through lawyers. I think that's the worst. I want to talk to somebody. I want to understand their intent and our intent because most of the time you can actually work something out. The problem is what's written on paper probably restricts you from doing that.
Exactly. Most of the time it does. And it's frustrating. And there's tons of learning. I'm gonna get myself in trouble. There's tons of learning lessons around that. But I don't know. What's been your biggest lesson in 2020 through COVID? Because it's the day before Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving's mm-hmm. tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Yeah, happy Thanksgiving. It's been, I would have said up until a month ago, it's been my least favorite year ever. In the existence of my life.
Years.
I'm super pumped now.
Yeah.
Last 30 days. But what's the biggest lesson? Because there are people out there that are feeling the same thing, right? So they didn't get the sales numbers they wanted, or they've had to lay some people off. Some people are just killing it. Business is booming.
Oh, sure.
Especially if you're making freaking masks these days.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll stay away from that one. Yeah. I saw you tried on that one. To me, it just comes back to people. I don't think there is anything that can get thrown at any business that doesn't end up with people. So you talk about mass companies killing it right now, right? There are probably people doing a really good job of effectively distributing those things, right? Or I think like Clorox is still sold out, which is nuts, but whatever. Like they've been able to find, and you know what's funny? Everyone talks about Clorox being sold out. You know what I think about? Who is in charge of manufacturing distribution? Because they could be making even more money right now.
I just saw an article this morning about PlayStation 5. They did such a good job with hyping demand. They are sold. There's a PlayStation 5 on eBay right now for $25,000 because demand couldn't keep up. And so the CEO, basically the article is about the CEO saying, we did such a good job hyping up and got the demand thing figured out. We didn't figure out the supply thing. Like, so now we have a massive business problem trying to figure out supply because they're worried Xbox is going to
come in and take it. Exactly. You know? Exactly. Yeah. I think all of those, any challenge any business is going through, it comes down to people and their ability to adapt. And I think my biggest lesson is just really grinding through that. I think your comments about us kind of just expecting some things to happen, or, oh, we got somebody plugged in to go do that. It's like, no, like let's support that person. Let's help that person. We definitely don't want to micromanage that person because you and I will slow that person down. But I think it is all about just getting that much closer as people. And I think that is hard in a COVID world because it really pushed people really far apart. So yeah, my biggest lesson is staying as close to people as possible. We were in Colorado, and one of the things I reflected on, and I told you this, and you guys are going to see this, is that I want to make sure that I'm pouring into our people at a different level than I was. And that is my takeaway, because if it always comes down to people, what can I do to move that needle is I need to pour into them.
Yeah.
So that's probably my biggest one.
Yeah. For me, cause I had somebody ask me the other day, for me, it's, knowing my biggest takeaway is knowing every single detail about your business.
There you go. Can't hate that.
I didn't a year ago. We were all in here yesterday in the conference room, and we got into a big discussion, heated discussion, very passionate discussion about knowing your competitors. And Ben and Patton both felt strongly one way.
Yep.
And I want to know everything. I want to know every single thing. I think it's why, you know, you go to football games or baseball games and there are people looking through binoculars at the other team and their signals and what they're doing.
Yep.
Right.
Just
to get a little bit of a competitive advantage if they can.
Yeah.
What they do with the information, you know, that's up to them. Who knows what they do? So maybe they don't do anything. Maybe they're just psyching people out with binoculars and it's a reverse psychology thing. Right. But to me, through 2020,
knowing everything,
every detail about your business,
I love that.
Where you make money, where you lose money, where you want to invest money strategically that's going to maximize return, what people are knocking on all cylinders, what people aren't.
Yep.
Because there's a huge people element to every business.
No, I think it's interesting. Knowing everything includes knowing people.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And not always do business owners, especially small business owners, necessarily think about that.
We just rolled out a people development plan here on staff. We're going to do it to everybody in the company, but right now it's just staff. And it's like, where do you want to go with the company?
Exactly.
What's your path? What path do you have in your mind? Does that path align with what the company needs?
Mm-hmm.
If so, awesome. Here's the steps to get there. If no, maybe we should think about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
We don't want to waste your time.
Yeah.
You know, so I don't know. To me, every day I wake up, there were days in the past where it's like, man, production's good today. Nothing's on fire. Things are rolling. Maybe I don't really need to think about anything today.
And now you're like, what about this? What about this?
You could look at every detail of your business. And if you're not a master at that thing, there's a lot of work to do.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way.
No, I like that. I like that. And it's actually interesting. You talk about kind of our differences. And you've mentioned it a couple times on this. I really like your answer because it is very different than mine. Mine almost is saying...
You have more empathy than I do.
Well, according to that survey we took, yeah. Which I don't necessarily know is actually representative. But I think it's interesting because you have that learner's mindset. And so you're sitting there saying, I want to know more. I want to understand every single thing about this business. My learner's mindset is, I don't know that I feel like I could almost ever know enough. And so I'm just trying to get all of our people to know enough, which is an interesting thing, right? Because I think both are true and we actually need, it's not really an or, it's an and, right? We need to be trying to learn as much as possible ourselves, and we need all the people in the team to be trying to learn as much as possible themselves. And it's like, okay, so how do we go about making this happen? I think I think it's an awesome takeaway from a year that no one could expect.
Yeah.
Because nobody expects GDP to drop by a third in a quarter.
Yeah.
Right? Like that is black swan event level stuff. And when nobody expects it, what do you got to do? You got to learn.
Yeah. Yeah. I completely agree.
That's cool. That's a good one.
Well, this has been fun. In the spirit of transparency, we're going to end this podcast, grab a beer, use the bathroom, come back and record another podcast that will come out a week from whenever you're hearing this one.
Yeah.
Because
this one, I want to try to get out next week if we can.
Yeah,
I would love to.
The one you're listening to.
Should be the week after Thanksgiving if we can make everything happen.
Yeah. So it's been a ton of fun. And like always, we don't have advertisements. And I'm not even super, I don't care if you guys share this or like it or comment. I want our people to get value.
Yeah.
And the people that are listening, if you're not on our team, I just want you to know Thomas and I both live for building businesses.
Love
this is
this.
Fun.
This,
like
this.
If someone paid us to do this podcast, I would feel guilty because I want people to learn from our lessons.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to help people live, the life of a business owner or a manager or a boss, mm-hmm. whatever, mm-hmm. a little bit better because they've learned from one of our woes that happened over the last several years. And so that's our goal. So we hope you guys have gotten some value out of this. We have a lot of fun. And
DM us, hit us up always.
Yeah. Instagram, LinkedIn. We'd love to help in any way we can. Yep. So thanks so much for listening, guys. Yep.
Appreciate it, everybody.